This is the second half of the interview with Balaji Gopal from Vanguard Australia. If you haven't listened to the first half, that's available at episode 18A. In this episode, we talk about ETFs, Vanguard's new personal investor platform, and then go through some of our listener questions. This episode is brought to you by Fresh Equities. Fresh Equities enables investors to take part in listed company capital raises. Commonly known as placements, these raises are often done at a good discount to the market price. I recently discovered Fresh Equities and was amazed at the number of investment opportunities available, many of which are in the healthcare and biotech space. It's free to join, and members get access to the widest selection of ASX-listed placements, over 400 last year alone. Discover what's on offer by visiting freshequities.com today. This podcast is not financial advice, and all opinions expressed by podcast participants are solely their own. Please seek professional advice before making any financial or investment decision. Let's move across to talk a bit more about ETFs. Can you explain what an ETF is and then how investors use them as part of their portfolio?
Excellent. An ETF works very similar to a managed fund. It's just that this fund is available on an exchange and you can buy or sell it as if you're buying any Australian share like a BHP or an ANZ bank on the exchange. And usually you do it through a broker or through our personal investor platform, also created the ability for people to come in and buy our Vanguard ETF's brokerage fee. An ETF is slightly different to the fund, where the price of the ETF changes throughout the day based on the buyers and sellers that are looking at trading ETFs. So it gives you an added layer of liquidity. So where it's slightly different from a fund is, say, in a fund, you put in an application for more units, and then a fund will look at going to market and buying some of the underlying shares. And in reverse, when you put in a redemption within a fund, the fund will then take it, and to the extent it doesn't have cash, it might look at selling some of the units in the fund to repay those monies to you. In an ETF, you have these added layers of liquidity. So when you talk about ETFs, there's a lot of discussion and around there's a common phrase around on-screen liquidity, which is essentially when you look at trading an ETF on your platform, you'll see the number of buys and sells, and it'll come up with a buy price and a sell price. That's really a function of the balance between the buyers and the sellers in an ETF. So you could just exchange ETFs between a buyer and a seller without needing to sell any of the underlying security. So it's like a nice little exchange facilitated by the Australian Stock Exchange through your broker. And ETFs also have the added liquidity, as I described earlier, where because it's an open-ended fund, there's this market-making mechanism where, you know, market makers ensure that the fund very closely representing the true value of what the ETF should represent. So it's essentially, if you're looking at the Australian 300 portfolio, an ETF will more or less always reflect the true value of the weighted average of the underlying 300 stocks, and plus or minus expenses and fees.
I buy a parcel of VAS every other month as part of my passive investing portfolio.
Thank you.
I've always wondered, where are the shares? Yeah, where are the shares underlying VAS? Is it the Vanguard Australian Shares Fund? I was looking at the assets under management, and VAS and the shares fund are identical. Is that where the assets are being held?
Sure. For Vanguard, VAS is one. You know, VAS is a good example. We've had VAS for a very long time. We created the fund, and the fund's built a bit of scale, and then we launched our ETF as a share class of the fund. So it's still a very it's its own product, but it's able to leverage the scale in the fund. So when we have to create or redeem units in the ETFs, then what we do is those things get accrued within the fund. So the overall portfolio is, I think, roughly about $15 billion now. So that's where those shares are held. So your example of VAS, when you buy VAS, your assets are held under trust through the fund, and the value of your ETF will always track very closely to the true value of the underlying 300 stocks.
That makes sense. So it's almost like a secondary market. If I'm buying it from another person who is already holding that parcel, which is underlined by the assets in the shares fund. That makes sense. That's really good because I haven't seen that clearly explained anywhere before. And then does that mean that all the ETFs that Vanguard has have an underlying fund which holds the assets?
Yes.
Yep. Okay, very good. You mentioned market makers. I've always wondered, who are these people? Are they hedge funds? Are they superannuation funds? Or are they just a bunch of guys sitting there looking at their computer screen eating potato chips?
Well, I don't know if they're eating potato chips, but these are. There's what we call an authorized participant and market makers. So they're these very large trading firms, and typically they're part of very, very large banks like the BNP and Citi and so on and so forth. So what they do is they work on the ETF market to try and provide more and more liquidity. The reason why they exist is to provide greater liquidity into the market. So when they're constantly monitoring markets, and say if people are overbuying ETFs and the price is going up, then what they do is they come in and try and normalize that market so that the parcel ETF parcels then start trading closer to the net asset value, and so on in reverse. So what they're doing is they provide an essential source of liquidity. So this is this for the ETF market, and they also make sure that there's enough liquidity in the market. So when you and I are trading against each other on the secondary market, they also make sure that the prices are very, and the spreads between the bid and the ask are kept very, very tight.
Good. And I've always wondered, with the management expense ratios, the ETFs tend to be lower than the index funds. Is there a reason there's that discrepancy if they're essentially the same underlying product?
Sure. So this is our 10th year of operation in ETFs. Actually, this is year 11. So when we started ETFs, we recognized that, you know, many of our investors had to pay a brokerage fee. And in recognition of that, we priced our ETFs slightly lower than funds. And we've just continued on that trend. And that's why you'll see our ETFs are generally slightly cheaper than the fund equivalent. But essentially, the strategy is virtually the same.
And so we've discussed kind of the index funds, and now we've discussed the ETFs. Common question is, which one should I go for? And so what are the considerations that investors should really take into account when deciding between whether they go direct with Vanguard and buy the index fund, or they invest on the publicly traded ETF version?
Well, a step before that is, before you start any of this journey, it's really good to understand your strategy and then the structure. So from a strategy standpoint, you know, what is the exposure I'm seeking to get access to? Is this fairly diversified? Is it liquid? Is it low cost? And does the provider have a long history of being able to run this? What is their history with looking at fees and so on and so forth? So these are some of the important considerations. And then it's a matter of preference as to whether you want to go in with a fund or an ETF. We are seeing a big chunk of our flows go into ETFs. I always tell people, managed funds have the assets, but ETFs have the growth. And ETFs have grown quite phenomenally in Australia. So many people have realized the benefits of ETFs, because by buying ETFs, it's also easy for many investors to just start to create these smaller portfolios. So they could just create their own version of a diversified portfolio through an Australian fund, a global fund, and fixed income allocations, and so on and so forth. So that's how we've seen ETFs grow quite significantly.
Yeah, and it's good for beginners as well, because you can start it with a hurdle of only $500 versus $5,000 minimum, isn't it, for
that's right.
a direct index fund investment. Yep, well, let's move on. That's really good coverage of your core products. So I just want to have a bit of a chat about some of your newer products as well. What are some of the newer products that Vanguard has released or is releasing soon?
So we started our journey with our factor range, which is essentially looking at, you know, where if you invested in active funds, our view is that a majority of the performance of an active fund can distribute into its core characteristics around, you know, value or momentum or minimum volatility. So we created these factor exposures. We also started our journey with ESG funds 3 years ago. So we will be looking at ESG and bringing more offerings to market in that space. And last year, we brought for the first time what we call a manager select series. So where we've launched fundamental active strategies, where Vanguard's not running the money, but we've asked some of our advisors with whom we've had very long-standing relationships to manage active portfolios around global equities and emerging markets. And that's something that we will continue to develop. But from our standpoint, through the launch of the personal investor and superannuation and so on and so forth, we really want to spend a lot more time with investors around how to build better portfolios, how to use our products, So those are some of our plans going forward.
Yeah, a common question has been, when will the super product be released? Is any idea on that at the moment?
So we are still working on the offer. So we announced late last year to the market. So we're still working through, you know, what the entire offer is going to look like. At this stage, no launch date has been set, but we really hope to be able to share some of that in the not so distant future.
A lot of people are very excited about that, given the whole, you know, write downs and stuff that's happening in a lot of the superannuation funds over the last couple of months. Let's go across to the personal investor platform, because that's a really exciting new product that Vanguard has launched. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Vanguard Personal Investor was we launched that to try and make it easy for direct investors to invest in Vanguard funds and ETFs, and to also really improve the investment experience for those wanting to invest into our product. So it's essentially a website which is simple and with a very simple and straightforward investment offer. We've spent a fair amount of time in terms of looking at the user experience to try and make it very seamless. Look, I signed on it not so long ago, and you know, within 5 to 7 minutes, I was completely set up. I linked my cash account and I was good to go. So I'd encourage you and your listeners, even if you choose not to invest in it, to just go in, sign up, and we can provide you with the link. And then over time, you can connect your cash account and be ready to invest into Vanguard funds, ETFs. And at this stage, we've also made available the ability to invest in the majority of the ASX 300 stocks.
I was looking through the investment options and it really looks like a Vanguard buffet in there. It's like going to the Shangri-La, you know, buffet, where you can choose to have a few ETFs for entrees, some index funds as the main course, and then some direct shares for dessert. Can you just talk a bit more about, you know, the offerings and the price of, you know, brokerage? Because I think that's really something that's very interesting, like you said, about entry to the wholesale funds with effectively, you know, no minimum hurdle, and then also the ETFs having no brokerage.
Yeah, absolutely. So from a product sense, all our ETFs are available on the Personal Investor platform, as well as all of our wholesale funds, with the difference being the ability to invest with a minimum of $5,000. For Vanguard funds, there is no brokerage. And if investors choose to buy ASX traded shares through our platform, that comes at a cost of $19.95, and there's a minimum purchase price of about $500 for ASX shares.
And so the cost of to investors to use the platform is 0.2% of what they have invested, isn't it? And capped at $600 a year.
That's correct.
Yeah. So if they've basically got more than 300 grand, then it's worthwhile doing that platform compared to going directly.
Absolutely. And even at a low balance, if you are going to continue to invest in Vanguard, there's the added benefits of the investment experience, and also the reporting and the statements and so on. So all of that is in one place. So it's at a nominal cost of 0.2%. But when you look at the overarching cost of the platform plus the product, it averages out to be, it ends up being fairly nominal. And like you said, at the $300,000 mark, it tends to offset each other.
And so if investors have direct shares in there, do they get participation in dividend reinvestment programs?
Yes, absolutely. It's just like you have the same rights as you would had you gone through any other broker.
And is it just a web-based platform now, or is there an app as well?
We don't have an app as yet now, but that's in the plan. So we started off with the website, and at this stage we're only accepting monies from based on individual names. So an SMSF functionality is not there as yet, but that's the next cab of the rank. There should be some movement there.
And if people have, or investors already have, you know, funds held with you, can they roll those into the personal investor, or is that a separate thing at the moment?
So that's a separate thing. So we are looking at, you know, what is the best and how do we affect the best investment experience for that. And, you know, that's something we're thinking about as well.
And now a quick word from our sponsor, ShareSite. ShareSite is the simplest way to monitor and manage your share portfolio. I discovered ShareSite in 2019. It was like being gifted with another set of eyes and my own personal portfolio accountant. ShareSite automatically calculates capital gains, dividends, and franking credits. It even automates brokerage, dividend reinvestment, share splits, and exchange rates for my overseas holdings. You can try ShareSite for free and manage a portfolio of up to 10 shares. As a valued listener of my podcast, I've twisted their arm to get you 2 months free access if you decide to upgrade to their premium features with an annual subscription. Visit this link, medicalmoney.com/sharesite. That's SHARESIGHT to get started and say goodbye to spreadsheets forever. You talked about factor investing, and so some of the things you mentioned were ESG and also having other managers to manage these funds. What are some popular ones that have you been released in the recent years in that active fund space?
In the active fund space, we launched a value factor, a minimum volatility factor, and also a multi-factor, which is essentially a portfolio of factors in the one fund. And more recently, the Manager Select series, where the global equities and the global emerging market strategies that are managed by two managers, Wellington and Bailey Gifford, who we've known for a very long time. So these have been some of the newer funds and that we've launched. You know, we're seeing a fair amount of interest from them, from both direct investors as well as our advised clients.
And you've also got some active managed ETFs as well, haven't you?
Yeah. So from a Vanguard perspective, this is a labeling issue. So from a Vanguard standpoint, anything that is not standard market cap weighted, we call that active because essentially your performance is going to be different to that of an index. So in that context, we refer to all our factor offerings as active. And like we've done with our other offerings, when we launch a factor fund, we've also launched an ETF share class of that.
And so if those ETFs are almost like a listed investment company because they're not specifically tracking an index, do you, you know, with LICs in the annual report, you've got to put down, you know, remuneration and all that kind of stuff. Does that have to happen with something like an active ETF?
No, we don't have to, because the only thing we, when we launch these products, we need to call them and label them as an exchange traded managed funds, and you need to classify them as an active ETF. But for the most part, they follow the same approach as we do with our index funds. So whilst they're not tracking a certain benchmark, it's very it's very close to it. And we also publish our portfolio for any investors to be able to come in and look at it. And also, unlike an LIC, this active ETF also tracks very close to its true net asset value through the market making framework. So, you know, from our standpoint, it operates and feels very much like a standard ETF, but it's just labeled an active ETF.
So in the recent downturn, there's been, you know, a lot of interest in things like inverse ETFs. Where does Vanguard stand on these more exotic and alternative type ETFs? Will we see like a self-driving car ETF or something, you know, obscure?
You know, this is a question that comes up fairly frequently. So Vanguard's product development is very responsible. So as I said earlier, any product we look to launch, we want there to be we want to satisfy ourselves that over time, any product that we bring to market will have the ability to generate a real return over time, is diversified, is low cost, is enduring, and can continue to be offered at low cost. And we also have a very important criteria that when we look at our products around, will investors use these products appropriately? Now, based on these measures, there's a number of things that we won't do, and you know, the self-driving cars and so on and so forth. We feel at this point that that's not truly diversified. It may get to that point at some point in the future, and then we might consider it. But we have a pretty strong view on what we seek to bring to market. And an extension of that is we also have a dim view on launching commodity type of products. And when I talk about commodity, I'm talking about oil and gold and so on and so forth. Now, gold's done exceptionally well, but from our standpoint, to bring this to life, gold is essentially a store of value. It doesn't generate an income, and it doesn't generate a real return over time. So from that standpoint, we've refrained from launching gold. This is not for us to espouse whether gold is good or bad, or whether oil is good or bad, but it's just something we've steered away from, and we've always gone back to the whole core principles of diversification, low cost, liquid.
That makes sense. Stay true to those initial principles. So we've got a number of listener questions that if you're happy to answer, I'll just fire away. So a lot were related to fees. In the US, there are some index funds that have no fees and some which might even pay you, I think, as an onboarding process to invest with them. Where do you see the fees going in the Australian ETF market?
So as a general trend, this is where Vanguard's consistently dropped our fund. And I think the industry as a whole is also doing that now. So I would say investors should be very keenly looking to low cost, but demonstrate some skepticism of no cost, because it costs money to run these funds. So if you're not paying for it, then you know, how is an issuer essentially getting remunerated? So you know, what are you truly paying for is a question that should be asked.
Yeah, whether they're using those funds for loaning to short sellers or other funny things as well.
Maybe, or trying to sell you, or trying to sell you other higher cost funds and so on and so forth. We don't know what that might be, but it's just something for investors to be mindful of.
That's true. They're also cross-selling to other products in their, yeah, in their suite. One of the other guys, Dev, asked if, I think you just answered it, but he said, you know, you reduced your fees in 2019. Can you reduce them even more and take a smaller bite out of his watermelon? But I think we just keep watching that space, don't we?
No, we'd love to. And we have a long history of doing that year on year. So what's the space?
Do you think you can be more competitive with your personal investor fee? Even Scott Pape thinks it's a little high. That was a question from Nish.
We absolutely, you know, a personal investor pricing is no different to how we think about pricing over time. So from our standpoint, we want to lower the cost of investing. And that's not just products, that's across everything. The fee that we've come to market with is something that we feel is reasonable, and it pays for some of the underlying expenses that we incur to keep this platform. But again, this is not to say that this is going to be a fee that will be there forever. And over time, like with everything else, we review our fees, and to the extent that we build scale, we will be reviewing these fee arrangements over time.
Vishal asked a question on, like, with VDHG, which is the ETF, are there internal fees that are paid to the underlying fund that are not included in the management expense ratio of, you know, 0.275?
No, it's 0.27. And what that does is it's a diversified exposure that invests into these underlying pools. So you're not paying more additional fees for the underlying exposures. This is the all-in cost of VDHG.
Okay, all-inclusive. So on Australian domiciled ETFs, so Oz asks, when will you switch your domicile VTS and VEU ETFs to Australia? Because currently they're US-based, aren't they?
They're cross-listed, and one of the challenges with this is the need to complete a W-8 BEN form, which I know some investors quite rightly don't want to do. So this is something that we're absolutely looking at in the context of trying to improve the investment experience. So I don't have a date as yet, but we're really looking into it right now.
Because when it's domiciled in Australia, we can then do dividend reinvestment plans, can't we? Whereas if it's the cross-linking, we can't do that?
Yes, that's right.
And Guy asks, will you be releasing a passive screened ethical Australian ETF similar to the VESG one that exists in the US?
So this is a good question. We have a lot of questions around Australian ETF. This is something we're looking at. But again, the easy thing to do here is to just launch a product. But if you really think of ESG in an Australian market, which is somewhat concentrated, we want to make sure that any product we bring to market doesn't put our investors in a worse off position, and that we absolutely satisfy ourselves that you can still have the right type of exclusions in a product, but it continues to have strong investment and client merit. So it's watch this space, and hopefully we'll be able to give you an update on this over time.
Yep. And John asks, can non-Australian residents buy into Australian Vanguard funds, so, say if they're resident of Singapore or Japan?
We do have investors who come in. I think our product disclosure statements are explicit in that because of FATCA rules and laws, we prevent US people from buying into the product. But I feel there's no explicit exclusion of people from other countries buying in. We do have investors from Japan buying in, but the best place to refer to that would be the PDS, the product disclosure statement for each of these funds.
Okay, so it's individual. And On the personal investor platform, is there a minimum time frame that you have to sign up for, or can you cancel at any point? I think it's billed quarterly.
Yeah, you can cancel at any point in time, and I would suggest even if you sign up, connect your cash account, even if you don't trade, then when you're ready to trade, that would be a good way to get into the to be able to experience the platform.
Yep. And Simon has a question on passive investing. Obviously, there's been a lot of talk about passive investing being a huge proportion of funds going into the market. Is there what's Vanguard's perception on this in terms of how much passive funds can be invested before we kind of see something topple over?
See, as much as there's been a ton of money that's gone into passive investing, a bulk of the assets continue to remain in actively managed funds where people, professional fund managers, are buying and selling stocks. So there's a lot of talk around, you know, is indexing causing a lack of price discovery where, you know, if everybody's buying, then the prices keep going up, then is there true price discovery in the market? Now, Vanguard's done a ton of research and on this, as well as a number of other providers have. Our view is that the price of a security is determined by the number of buyers and sellers. It's basically through trading activity. And most of the trading activity still accounts for the active management in the active management world. So to bring that to life, say if people continue to index and index and the stocks go up, then at some point it's going to get overvalued. And what would happen is an active manager would see that, say, a BHP or an ANZ or something is massively overvalued, and they would then sell that down. And that's true, and that's how the active management community works. And that really is what constitutes price discovery. So the price of the underlying constituents of an index, ironically, is set by the active management community who trade more of these stocks. So this is a misconception, and it's a good question, and it's always worth looking at it because indexing, whilst has been very popular, it's still only about 10 to 15% of the overall investable universe.
There's so much stuff about it, but it's whether it's just clickbait articles for things, you know, highlighting Burry, who's been quite vocal in the past few months leading into the crash.
Yeah, absolutely. And Burry, one of the points Burry made was, you know, inappropriate use of derivatives could blow things up. And that's something which is fair and investors should consider when they enter into funds or ETFs into. If something is looking at using excessive derivative usage, and if an issuer doesn't have the capability to undertake those risks, then yeah, that is a risk. So, as a general rule, it's always good to go into fully backed ETFs. So, where an issuer like a Vanguard is holding the underlying, but when you look at excessive derivatives within an ETF, just be careful.
That's excellent. I think now that you've clarified, in my mind at least, that the ETFs are backed by the fund, it makes things very, very much more transparent and reassuring, I suppose, is the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time today. You've covered so much ground and answered so many awesome questions that I wouldn't have found answers to anywhere else. What's your advice to investors looking to get into the market or to expand their portfolio with Vanguard?
So it comes back to those investment principles I described earlier, and particularly in these markets, this is truer than ever before. So it's essentially trying to adopt a mindset of controlling what you can. You know, costs are ever so important during market corrections. So high cost investments will eat into your negative returns. So keep a lid on costs. I mean, don't look at, you know, paying no cost, but, you know, as a general rule, look at low cost. The second point is, you know, setting realistic expectations. It's prudent to expect lower expectations in the future, given the remarkable returns and what the market's undertaken. So eventually, when you look at the long-term history of equity markets, markets tend to, you know, trend upwards. So whilst it feels like now markets are going up and down, be realistic of your future expectations, take a very long-term view. And for any market, the final point is to really stay diversified. You know, markets go up and down, but, you know, taking a long-term view, spreading your portfolio across different asset classes, sectors, and geographies is really one way for investors to stay diversified. And the final one is, irrespective of what markets do, what cannot be underestimated is the impact of our own investor actions, you know, our ability to make ongoing contributions to our portfolio, our ability to save more, spend less. These are things that really make a difference in the long term rather than, you know, trying to time markets and so on and so forth. So most people, for many investors, it's really important to just come back to the realization of, in terms of the actions that they can take. There's a ton of this information on the Vanguard website. There's also a Smart Investing Weekly newsletter that we publish. We can share those links with you, Andrew, if you'd like to publish them. And there's a number of avenues by which you can contact Vanguard in case any of your listeners would like to explore further. But yeah, we're open.
Very good. I'll have those links in, and I'll publish them in the show notes so people can find out more, because I think it is very exciting. I think a lot of guys will be much more interested, especially now that you've explained things in detail that they can understand. Perfect. Thank you so much for your time today. Can't thank you enough. I look forward to maybe catching up with you again in the future.
Likewise. Thanks for having me.
If you're interested in learning how to optimize your finances, please subscribe to this podcast. Also, head over to my blog, medicalmoney.com, and subscribe to stay updated. If you know a colleague who might also find this information useful, please share this with them. I'd love to get your feedback, so send questions, comments, and recommendations to me at andrew@medicalmoney.com. See you in the next episode.